Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, and I don't presently have a TV show. I'm joined by Justin Robert Young, who also does not presently have a TV show.
I woke up today and I'm like, wait, what could make my life better? Having a TV show. Oops, I guess I'm doing a life of a gray hellscape. Anyway, who else is on the show?
We got Brian Brushwood.
Bastard.
I was in that club, but then this weekend I got an air date for the Escape School TV show.
What?
Yes!
Yay! Wait, Justin, are we angry or are we happy? Woo! We angry or happy?
You're better than us!
Yeah, that's right. This would be, what, 3 television networks now you've spread your little Brian stink on?
Well, only 2 successfully now. And then I guess whatever appearances count. But this is the coolest thing. We've been talking for years. It's one of those things where it's like at every meeting, it's like, oh man, it just seems like Discovery, you know, they own all of Scam School. It seems like we should package it up as a TV show or whatever. And then finally, the right awesome people over at Science are like, okay, let's just do that. Let's try it out and go nuts. So we recorded 2 half-hour pilots, and there are some stuff, I don't know, almost a third of it, I would say, is stuff we shot just for the television show. And then maybe as much as half with all the interstitials and everything, right?
Maybe a third is about right.
Yeah. So basically, we're able to cover 6 or 7 episodes worth of Scam School stuff. And so we're using, you know, some of it is footage that you might have seen. You probably haven't, because most people haven't watched every single episode. But assembled into 2 half-hour pilots. And it's fun, and it moves fast, and it covers a lot of material. And here's the funny part. It's on Saturday,
The 24th?
Saturday the 24th.
Okay, you ready for this?
At 8 o'clock.
And 8:30.
All right, go on.
And 8:30.
Setting my DVR right now.
A.M.
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 8. But look at the block you're in. What is it? There's like Outrageous Acts of Science.
Yeah, no. We're right next to Outrageous Acts of Science. So this is the exciting part.
And it's, Soviet doomsday device.
Yeah. Well,
but you guys are the leadoff, right? So I guess they're doing commercials from 2 in the morning until 8. So they're trusting you guys to be the leadoff hitters.
Getting it back to the beginning. So here's the great part. Part of me, I'm not gonna lie, is super excited because I have nothing but pure good vibes about Saturday morning television watching. It's like I finally joined the pantheon of Turbo Teen and Dungeons and Dragons and the Q-Bert cartoon as a Saturday morning staple for one pilot. But here's the exciting thing is, to be honest, I couldn't be happier, because if this is a test, and it all, you know, I would assume that if it does very, very well, there could be a lot more television shows. It's very hard for our tiny little community to move the needle on a primetime television release. But I think we can move that needle pretty hard on an 8:30 a.m. Saturday morning. And by the way, that's 8 a.m.
There's only
East
one
Coast
feed.
Time.
Also, yeah, it's 8 a.m. East Coast.
Which means
5 a.m.
West
Coast.
So the good news is when you get in from the club stumbling home, just stay up 1 extra hour and then go to bed.
On over to the Science Channel as you are coming out of your K-hole. Because it's 99, you will enjoy Brian's show.
So anyway, DVR, everybody just right now DVR that bees, because that would be great if they saw like a 20-fold increase from the like, well, apparently Scam School is the biggest gainer we've ever had. Viewership went up 10 billion%.
So yeah, here's the biggest thing. There's a lot of different factors that go into stuff like this. This was an unconventional way for you guys to get on television from the behind the scenes. There was not
and he like sit down and pitch, and everybody decides like, all right, well, let's let it. Like, they're like, no, we have full rights to this. Brian has his own production company. Let's just box it all up. We'll throw it on television. This is literally just them testing it out. I am super proud because this was you guys doing it all by yourselves. You guys didn't partner with another production company. You guys used footage that was already shot with Scam School and shot a lot of it yourself. So it's something that you should be tremendously proud of. Not only you, Brian, but also Brant and Bryce, who put together everything. So I am super pumped to see this at 5 o'clock in the goddamn morning.
Yeah. And by the way, I was thinking of clever ways. This is probably more of an after things thing to talk about, but I want to record, do a live stream with the whole family in pajamas eating breakfast cereal. We can all have a giant Saturday morning cereal. We'll call it Breakfast of Scampions is what we could call it.
But you have to eat shrimp scampi.
Yes. We're having shrimp scampi.
Yeah, you're actually
going
to make shrimp scampi. Yeah. Butter and lemon.
Well, get ready for me to bang the drum on this really, really hard. I was shocked at how fast the turnaround was, where they're all like, because we got approval on the final cut, and then they're like, yeah. And so I'm thinking, like, you know, I was assuming television would move at the snail's pace, but instead, like, 3 days later, they're like, yeah, you're going to be on in 2 weeks from
today.
Yeah,
we got this date a couple of days ago. Yeah. So that's pretty weird.
It's pretty exciting, though. DVR, that stuff. Let's just get bigger from here.
You know, and the funny thing is that, like, now in the world of cable and stuff, your actual, and I want to say, I'm going to use the part of the phrase, the real Scam School, gets higher numbers than many cable shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, cable numbers have plummeted so much now that, like, you know, getting, you know, a couple hundred thousand views on a cable show is actually considered a big win, you know? And so it's sort of this, what a world we're in right now, where you're like, yes, hey, I'll go put this on Science Channel. We'll see if it works, but I don't want that to interfere with the main thing, you know, Modern Rogue in Scam School. That's sort of the awesome place that you're in, where the end goal is not a TV show. The TV show is an ancillary thing that you do to the main product.
Well, and that's the exciting stuff is, think about this. Let's say these two pilots do well and they come back with a big order, and then we're able to always lean on some of the old stuff, but also put some of the new stuff in there. So that essentially, like, what if the television show became nothing but this gigantic advertisement to funnel people into, you know, the real back catalog? Because when you watch a TV show, they're like, oh, that's really good. I wish there was more. Well, guess what, sucker? We got 500 plus episodes of this waiting for you. And then from there to lead them into this community and to the Modern Rogue, I don't know. This would be a very, very important arm of the whole operation if it does well. And that all begins with everybody just program your DVR, have your parents program their DVR, or better yet, do that for them, because most of them probably don't know how to do it.
Yes, you want to get them on board with that that technology of recording, that sort of programming that's not, like, you know, automatically, you know, there. And gentlemen, I'm a little bit alarmed. I'm a little bit concerned.
Uh-oh, why?
Why? Why?
I would turn my camera around and I would show you, but I've actually moved all my furniture in front of the windows. I've barricaded my doors. I've sealed myself inside of here with a bunch of Soylent, some water, and you know, like, you know, you talk about something for a while, maybe you make fun of a public figure, and then all of a sudden they reply to you on a tweet, and you're like, oh my gosh, they know that I'm real.
Yeah, that happened to me with Jessica Jones, like the character. Whoever runs the Jessica Jones Twitter didn't like that I said that. I thought it was silly.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah. So I think I'm in that position kind of thing.
Well, I mean, you can't be that scary.
One time I got yelled at by Martin Starr, the actor. I it was like as Party Down was ending, and I was like, that was a great final episode of Party Down. And he hit me back on Twitter and was like, hey, we don't have a decision on whether or not we're renewed yet. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, I was saying I liked your show.
Yeah. Also, I ran into that cast at an In-N-Out. And I walk in there and they're all just sitting there at a table. It's like the whole cast, like they just got done with a catering job. Like, I look over and I did this, like, wait, did I just walk into an episode? I'm like, hey guys, I really love your show. Like, cool.
The next
Man, cool. And man. This was like at the point when like Lynch was leaving and the show was probably on the verge of not making it back, you know, kind of thing. And so they're like, I'm like, yeah, I love the show and all that. And it's kind of like this. Yeah. Where were you before? You know, so they were cool. But it was just like the last thing they wanted to see was a fanboy like, hey, guys, I like your show.
So. All right. But this is all chump change. Brian's example was fictional. I think we could probably still take Martin Starr if we really kind of started doing some push-ups. But you seem really shook by who you pissed off on Twitter.
That's not on Twitter. Not on it's on this very show. And I just want to warn you, you guys could be next.
To have you piss us off or like, are you threatening us with a possible pissing?
No, I'm saying this threat that may be directed at me could change focus and focus on you guys.
Oh my God.
It is. We've stepped into the perfect scenario for the Weird Things movie. When they make the movie, I mean, after we're horribly murdered and they decide to do this kind of the movie of the Weird Things thing that, you know, if right now it'd be comedic and then it's like, oh no, it's just dark and tragic. It's dark and tragic. And it's a cliche plot. I will give you this. It is a cliche plot.
I mean, okay. We know the old cliche of Neil deGrasse Tyson hunting down independent weird podcasts and crushing them beneath his boot heel, that old trope. But I mean, surely he's too busy to do that to us.
It's not him. So I'm going to give you a scenario.
I got a couple things I want to get off my chest.
So tell me if you've ever seen this storyline before. Skeptic gets invited into some sort of supernatural paranormal investigation. And then.
Becomes a believer.
Yeah, it's real, and then he becomes the target or whatever. Kind
of sure.
Okay.
Isn't that the story with one of the UFO investigators over in England? There's a guy who became a believer. I forgot.
Right, it's every story. It's every story.
Yes.
So. Yeah.
You might have read it in a little book called The Bible.
Bunch of skeptics get converted.
All right, and I may be drawing connections a little bit loosely, but you have to be safe now. You can't in these day and age. There's just no way you can't just rush to judgment and not be glad that you did it. Mm-hmm. You know, in the 24-hour news cycle, if you don't have an opinion right away, you may have to change it a day later. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, that of course would be disastrous.
Yeah. Okay, so. I don't know if you know where I live.
I live in
a place called Southern California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I live in a town called Burbank. And perhaps one of the reasons that I live here is I grew up, as you may know, I grew up in Oregon. And then when I became aware of the threat of Bigfoot, my family moved to Florida.
Yeah.
Because
there's no monsters in Florida.
Yes. And then when I became aware of Skunk Ape in Florida, I decided it was time to go to California because it was just the proximity was just too much, guys.
Okay, now hold on. I think I know where this is headed, but Monkey Island got paved over. Yeah, those monkeys are all gone, right?
I know. It was monkeys. I mean, it was pretty clearly monkeys. I actually did research to find out because some of the monkeys went missing. Like, is there a population of monkeys somewhere? But point is, I thought I was safe here. I mean, I'd heard some stories and stuff, and we looked up. Remember the legends of like some terror lizards and stuff that turned out to be bogus and all that.
Well,
and
you get the errant random what appears to be a missile floating off the coast.
Oh my God! Oh yeah. So I thought I was safe. I thought I'd escaped. I can't even speak right. The giant simians, and then I open up my news and I get a report of this, and it's right. Light, let's near La Canada, Flint Ridge, which is just a few miles away from where I live.
Don't leave us hanging here. We have to look. If we
Bryce
need to rally the troops, we can
I'm
defend
sorry,
you.
Guys. I just need to.
All right, so we're waiting. All right, here we go. It's a mystery creature.
Just off the 210 freeway, there may be something different, really different, hiding in the trees.
Cell phone footage.
Who else seen a leprechaun?
Often takes a stroll in the woods during his lunch break, but last week.
while walking by himself in La Crescenta.
Camera footage through the weeds.
I heard a bunch of strange noises up in the trees. Figured it was just some types of birds or something like that.
Then a still uneasiness came over him.
I knew
I had a feeling that something was out there and kind of watching me.
Jake pulled out his phone and began shooting video. At first, nothing out of the ordinary.
I'm so confused.
But when he checked the footage a second time,
you can definitely see a torso and four limbs.
All right. There's
Pause.
This footage is fairly unambiguous. It really does appear to be a monkey swinging or walking on a branch.
Yeah, I don't even know what we're looking at. Pause that.
Huh?
I don't even know what the hell we're looking at.
I mean, it's clearly a thing walking in what appears to be the sky or up above.
Climbing through the trees.
With a very simian-looking gait. It definitely looks monkey-like, but it definitely looks like it's walking as though like because the camera's blown out, maybe there's a hill and you can't really see the hill. You just see the dark figure walking on the hill, so it looks like the dark figure's in the sky or among the branches of the trees.
I think it's climbing through the trees, Brian.
I mean, okay, I'll take your word on that. But that's a weird gait to climb on a tree. Oh, yeah, no, it's not. You could clearly see him grabbing branches.
It looks kind of a green monkey.
Well, I think the green is like a reflection of the undergrowth.
Oh, but I like the green monkey.
The green monkey.
I'm terrified of it.
Yeah, I mean, like, so it's like a crazy-ass green monkey running around?
Yeah, but I don't really even get a sense of how big those branches are, or how big the. Yeah.
I mean, Brian, you want to know what else is green?
The sweet money we get from Patreon.com.
Well, I mean that too, but also leprechaun.
Oh God, it could be a leprechaun.
We have something here. I'm going to tie this.
Told him to climb up the tree and play a leprechaun.
And act a leprechaun.
I'm going to throw out a theory here, and Brian touched upon it, and that is that, you know, we talked about my adventures of exploring the remnants of Monkey Island, which was this lost civilization, a tourist attraction, as some describe it, of monkeys in Los Angeles. People weren't quite sure on where the location was, and I found the foundations. I found the remnants of that next to the highway where it was, which has now been expanded and, like, gone, but I'm glad I got some photos of that. And my question was, where did the monkeys go? Because the monkeys fled at some point throughout the life of Monkey Island. And this is one of those regions that you look at on a map of where they could have spread to. And it's possible. It is possible. These could be remnants or lost citizens of Monkey Island.
The secret grandchildren of Monkey Island.
Or it's Bigfoot and he's going to murder me.
Either way, dude, congratulations. You're going to be the first of us to die at the hands of a mythical creature.
Yes, except for Alex.
Except for who?
I thought we agreed we don't talk about Alex.
Well, Alex was eaten by a creature that devours you and sucks you out of time and this universe.
Yeah, sucks to his asthma.
Yeah, and that's why you're on the show now, Justin. You replaced him. But we didn't want to tell you about it because...
It doesn't look like anything to me.
Yeah. So anyhow, there you go, guys.
That's a really good mystery, Andrew. Like, because there is a plausible theory in it, and even if, like, in this case, the most likely, most scientific theory, I don't know about most scientific, I guess the most scientific, most likely is some kind of visual artifact, although it really doesn't look like it. Next up is monkeys in Southern California.
I live 10 minutes away from there. I can hop in my car right now and go investigate this.
That's awesome. That's a great one. Good find.
It's kind of
good
a tempting
find.
Thing to, like, hey, guys, let me go.
I know,
this.
Yeah. Just go on the lookout. I mean, I guess if you were trying to, like, identify monkeys in that area, though, like, there's probably ways that you can, like, is that dude's out there just like, oh, my God, what's that rustling? Phone up, swinging around, right?
Well, Justin, you do know. We do have the world's greatest monkey whisperer on the show here.
We do.
You've seen it. You've seen it firsthand.
I've witnessed your power. I feel like you owe it to yourself to go out there.
Brian, I don't know if you know this, but yeah, I do have, that is my superpower. I am a monkey whisperer.
Look, are you just plugging the fact that you have a surprise cameo in the War for the Planet of the Apes?
No, we went a long time ago. End. We took a trip to the monkey jungle in Miami. Our buddy Chris Kenner got us really cool access into the back area and all that there. And just to say, like, I could get the little squirrel monkeys to come running out and climb all over me. I got the orangutan to respond and sign language. She loved me, even though people said she doesn't do that. I was able to get the other monkeys to respond. It was just, I speak their language and I don't want to brag, but it's just my gift.
That's amazing. Yeah,
listen, I've seen it. I've seen it with my own two eyes.
Yeah.
Hey Brian, you want to know what else is green?
Perfect segue.
Leprechauns.
The sweet money you give us on patreon.com/weirdthings.
Yeah, man. Join the nearly 400 patrons that keep us on the regs, always on the regular. Every single Monday afternoon at around 1:30 Central Time, we gather together to give you all the weird we can muster. And if you guys enjoy the show, why don't you kick us a dollar? And not only will you get the show, but you'll get after things on your very own feed, so that you can enjoy everything
and feel
smug and better.
You get after things early.
That's right.
Yeah, you get early and special questions.
Go ahead. Go check us out. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
Two quick space things before we go on to the major topic of the show here. One is that there was a little under-the-radar announcement. One is SpaceX. Elon Musk says that they're testing phases right now for the Falcon Heavy, which is going to be three Falcon 9 rockets strapped together, which would be the largest rocket to take off since the Saturn V.
Say it again slower. Just let me savor it.
Three Falcon 9 rockets strapped together. 27 engines, Brian. Okay.
So much power.
All right. 27 engines, and they're on task so far, maybe for an October, November launch. Now, again, this thing has been pushed off for years. Part of that, though, is the Falcon 9 itself. The power of that rocket has improved considerably. SpaceX just did a launch recently, an Air Force launch that was originally going to be a Falcon Heavy launch because the Falcon 9 wouldn't be powerful enough. Now it is. Meanwhile, the cool thing is that the Air Force, in like some committee hearing, announced that, oh yeah, and by the way, yeah, we've got a launch in August where the Falcon 9 existing rocket is going to be launching the X-37. That's the Air Force's little mini, you know, unmanned shuttle that they use to test stuff. So in August, SpaceX is launching that. Normally it was ULA who does that. Anyhow, they're going to be launching that, which, you know, SpaceX wasn't at liberty to say, hey, we're doing this, which means it's been planned for a couple of years. So kind of cool stuff there to be watching. We could have some really, really cool things going on. And, you know, I've got another reusable launch coming up in a week or so. But
that's the biggest thing about the Air Force news is the once SpaceX proved itself that it's reliable, then and you start to get into that kind of military contract money, like now it's very unlikely that SpaceX kind of ever goes away, right? Like, because there's always when you're talking about that kind of cash, you're talking about just an insane amount of money for what you're doing, because you are paying. They are these contracts are coming in, paying for reliability, and very often it is at tremendous expense.
Well, the question came in like, was ULA or were they upset that they couldn't bid on that launch? Well, the purpose of that launch was for the Air Force to have an alternative to the launch that the Delta that they use already. So that was the they're free to bid on it if they had some other new rocket system that they've, you know, oh yeah, no, we didn't tell you we've got this other rocket, which they don't. So the idea is to have not just have one launch provider they relied upon, which is what we've been doing for the last, you know, 20 years, and primarily before that, it was just a couple of them. And they became a monopoly known as ULA. So, you know, it is a very positive step, because it used to be that ULA had the monopoly, and even the rules kind of made it you could only sort of use ULA with the Air Force in particular, their contracts. And SpaceX sued to say, hey, you should change this up. We should be able to apply for being able to be rated for this and all that. And now that that's happened, we've I was saying before, there are people within the Air Force that are really excited about the idea of using SpaceX. And this is very clear now because we see the, what's happening with the idea that they're going to be using it for the X-37 tests. And I'm gonna just throw a little bit of rumor out there. SpaceX is going to be announcing their plans for the ITS, their next generation rocket system, what they call a scoped version, which could imply a scaled down version, which might make it more feasible to produce it using existing SpaceX infrastructure instead of building new factories and stuff. And it would not surprise me that not that they say they have any kind of agreement in place, but there might be a commercial interest, or interest rather, from the Air Force in a smaller scale version of that because of the usability of that. So
I assume eventually each of those stages on the Heavy will land themselves. But how fast are we expecting to see that, do you think?
The boosters, they may try to recover all of them on this launch.
What? Three yeah. simultaneously landing chips? I live to see it as I live and breathe.
Yeah, to quote Elon Musk, it's like, well, you know, we're either going to crash them in the ocean one way or the other.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's like, all right.
Land, you know. Golly, that would be amazing.
Yeah, that would be crazy. So your first two would be able to land probably back on the pad because they're the first. They would be the spend their fuel first. And then the next one would probably have to do a barge landing.
That's so cool. So cool.
And they also plan to the upper stage, which there's a lot of challenges there. They say they plan at some point to try to land an upper stage, which is going to be extremely problematic for a number of reasons because the bell nozzle on there is designed for functioning in space and whatnot. A lot of complications there. But I think that they've learned so much about reusability that we're going to probably see that in a next generation rocket via the ITS where built from the ground up for full reusability, where the Falcon 9, that was something they incrementally added.
So. Dude,
that's insane. That's just crazy. And what's crazier is that we're not just like doing a full backflip because we've seen so much of this incrementally.
Well, yeah. That's the exciting part is they got a fleet. They have a fleet of reusable space parts and it's getting bigger and bigger. That's amazing.
Yeah. But I'm not here to talk about this, folks. Oh. So let's talk about the future of entertainment. Let's talk a little bit about we had the big video game expo going on here in town.
Well, this is how, as I understand it, like E3, what begins today, but everybody does their dog and pony show before E3 officially opens, so they can be the buzz of E3. Is that appropriate?
It actually technically opens tomorrow, but all of the companies get the big press conferences out of the way early. So that when the show opens,
and I'll tell you
all
what,
stuff can be out there.
It's astonishing that it took a good 20 years for us to get to a point where, you know, like when I went to E3 back in 1997 the first time, it was because there was simply no other way to see the games. You know, there was no international distribution via the internet, and so it makes sense that now it's more a spirit of E3. You know, it's a season rather than an event, basically.
Well, you know, and I would say that what killed Comdex was in many ways the internet. You know, was that you, when you were a tech company initially, how do we tell people? Well, we'll all get together and we'll tell our buyers and suppliers and all that. What works for E3 in many ways, what this is, one, it's a consumer expo, but it is a place where a lot of developers and people get together to figure out what the heck they're going to be coding for and doing that. And that is kind of exciting because it means there's a longevity to it. It's like there is a, yes, we go there. One, you go there to show off your games, journalists and stuff, but also you send some of your tech people and stuff there because we got to figure out when somebody unveils a new piece of hardware and like Microsoft did, how the heck you're going to program for this thing and what you're going to do. So guys, talk a little bit. And I'm going to say, here was my reaction. Like I watched the Microsoft parts of the Microsoft unveiling and I'm like, okay, it's a better Xbox. You know,
for the record, though, it's like for Andrew Main, all of E3 is like Heroin Con 5000. Xbox announces even better, heroin. It gets you really high.
I mean, I'm a guy that will buy game consoles because I'm fascinated by the hardware. Like, I have, like, in storage, like, I have a Nintendo 64 because I was fascinated by the idea that they're able to take a Cray and put and condense that down in there and put that into that. You know, I have a Wii and I got the Wii and I just took this thing apart, looked at it, and looked at the controllers and stuff. Like, I'm more fascinated by the hardware and stuff. And I played Zelda on that. I'm like, yeah, this is amazing.
This heroin is now, really good. You know? It gets you really high.
Yeah.
So I have a confession to make. E3 used to be the season I lived for the most, but this year it just happened to be during my family reunion. So I've only heard everything peripherally. It's weird. We kind of just like I stopped going to E3 because I realized all the best parts would be curated and filtered and posted on internets and then discussed on forum boards and Reddits and so on. Now I'm at the point where it's like, I don't even want to watch the raw input of all that. I'm going to wait to just hear, you know, what are the stuff to be most excited about. So Justin, you're probably the most plugged in.
Absolutely not. But I do know this, the decision that was made, I think certainly by Microsoft and to lesser extent by Sony, was that they basically want to get off the idea. They want to break everybody of the idea that consoles run in, you know, 5+ year cycles, and that when we come out with a console, everybody buys it, and then the only thing that happens from there is maybe things get a little cheaper. What they want you to do is make this more, especially in a world where we're dropping hundreds of dollars every year on new phones and tablets and watches, that why can't your console be on a more realistic year-to-year cycle? So now every year they are going to give you the incrementally better version of the Xbox and the PlayStation. And that's what you're right, Andrew. This was just kind of a better Xbox, but that's now their strategy.
Open by a Weird Things gaming coverage where two of the hosts only play Hearthstone. That is not true.
I mean, it's getting to be pretty true. Like, my street cred in video game land is softer these days.
So, Bryce, what's up with E3?
Hey, I think you definitely have a point in that the console manufacturers would like to be more iterative on a yearly basis.
Closer to a smartphone kind of generation?
Yeah, but I think you have the trouble of consumers understanding that paradigm and finding value in it because, you know, they announced the $500 Xbox One X, which is a terrible name.
That's the best part is, like, let's have a confusing name to begin with. Let's have a bad name to begin with, and then just add the word X to the end of the already bad name.
Well, it's fine if that's just the only one, but the other normal Xbox is called the Xbox One S.
Geez. All right.
So it's kind of a Wii U situation. Mm. But so I think you have people who, gamers who are not necessarily in for that yearly commitment of price, especially when PC gaming has a little more longevity and customization in that. And I think right now both Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo all need games. I think they all need new games, new IPs. And if it's going to be hard to sell people a console if there are not good exclusives or properties that people are interested in, you know?
See, but I think the idea is not necessarily for you to say, I think ultimately Microsoft and Sony would love if everyone's like, oh, cool, I'll sell my Xbox and I'll get $150 from it, and that'll subsidize me buying the new thing that'll be iteratively faster. Mm-hmm. What I think is more realistic for them is saying, let's not have just one piece of machinery that we constantly have to discount year on year on year as we get further into the life cycle. Let's always sell it for $500 and add the little bells and whistles that come along with whatever's available to us every year. So that way you're not buying 3-year-old hardware in the same way that, like, they want to break you of that. It is always the best that you are buying for price.
The upside that we've reached in sort of the console situation, particularly when it comes to Microsoft and Sony, is that you had 12 years ago, there was a lot of, what do we need the architectures to be? Like, radical changes in architecture. You know, Sony with Celtex, you know, in that, and Xbox going like, do we really just want to put a version of Windows into here and do that, and the pros and cons of that? But ultimately, that's sort of – and then also you had to – with consoles, you had to make a lot more sacrifices because you're trying to do a lot more things on chip and on board. But as these things have become more PC-like, it's easier to say, okay, we can just improve the GPU here. You know, we'll upgrade the GPU, and that way we're not going through a radically different – you don't have to change really the way you program it and all that. And then on the development side, between Unity and Unreal and all that, and just, you know, on the game engine side of – there, it's those things are in an amazing place as far as usability, you know, the ability to sort of, you know – program for them and get them out cross-platform, et cetera. You know, obviously, if you want to be super, super cutting edge, you're going to be doing your own sort of stuff. But we have reached, I think, a really nice area of stability where you can say, yeah, I don't see a radical change for the next 10 or 15 years because even these systems support VR. They have this sort of stuff native to them. So, you know, and I get the idea incremental. I get the idea of like, yeah, maybe we could just say, yeah, every year we'll just put a faster GPU in there or increase the RAM or whatever. And, you know, 4K is going to be good for another 5 or 6 years. And then you're going to want to start pushing a video standard that supports VR.
And I also think
that part of it is kind of future proofing for the fact that PC gaming is here. Like, it's not coming. It's here in a way that it's never really been before, where the players that are controlling a lot of this market, including Steam, and the fact that you have so many different boxes for so many different things that are just flying out of China, you can put hardware together and sell it for an attractive price, and people are more used to those kinds of interfaces. They need to future-proof to say, no, we are the box company. And right now, you think of us as a console that's separate from a PC, but everything is kind of merging to one point, and they want to be... They want you to buy a Microsoft box that solves your gaming needs in the same way that you solve your other needs with very specific devices.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other sort of hurdle in getting to an incremental sort of release schedule is kind of avoiding like the iPadization of game consoles, of saying, oh, well, this works on the 2015 Xbox, but not the 2014 Xbox. And then you suddenly have to have graphs and charts of what stuff works and where it doesn't. Or you constantly have to be supporting a lowest common denominator that doesn't ever move up, which is the big point of having entire console generations. I think it'll be tough, but I do think that the console manufacturers will try to get there. I mean, Steam tried to do that with the Steam Box idea a couple years ago, but I think because that was so heavily based on Linux, you didn't get any traction on that. But
yeah,
but with Microsoft really investing in the Windows Store and their Play Anywhere program, I think that especially that confluence of Windows and Xbox will be Microsoft's big pillar.
So the point was made in the chat room, but that VR was sort of downplayed. And VR is in this very interesting place right now where we need a next step improvement in hardware for certain. And that's we're seeing that, like, the rumors, you know, are like, yes, now that we know that, hey, yeah, this could be a thing, it'd be a cool thing. One of the problems a lot of early VR demos, and this sort of made point of on Silicon Valley last night, was people were watching these things on really high-end gaming rigs and going, this is incredible. But when you look at what the average person had to use to power that stuff, you're like, and you could get it, you're like, it's a little, you know, it's like, so. But we've seen, you know, Moore's Law directly addresses transistor count and how we're going to affect, you know, what's going to the speed of GPUs. We just saw last week with with Apple, with the Worldwide Developers Conference, you know, they showed now they support a breakout unit for a GPU, a standalone unit for a GPU processor, just so you could do, you know, so you could do VR or higher end gaming and stuff from developers. They've put out their developer kits now for VR and AR because they're like, no, we think this is there. And I think that Apple's a very good canary or very good canary in the coal mine or place to watch, because they pay incredible attention into hardware pipelines and understanding what chipsets are going to be there and whatever. Oh, this is very cool. We're watching a demo somebody made just using in a couple, you know, just right out day or two after the whole Apple unveiled their AR. It's a version of Tilt Brush, but in, you know, your environment using on an iPhone. So you're watching what looks, you know, kind of like sort of a you know, a spray paint version of the game Tilt Brush, which you play in VR, which is really cool. But this is just using a standard shipping iPhone, and somebody's doing it in their kitchen.
Yeah. I know that historically it's not a good position to be the guy who says, I don't get it. But with the iPhone AR, I really am having struggling. I mean, it's very, very cool, and it can do a lot of things, but so far none of the demos have struck me as like, oh man, I need that in my life.
Well, you're watching, these are literally people who opened up the dev kit a day before, Brian.
Sure. Well, but usually there's some kind of distant what we can get out of it. And I do understand if you're wearing, you know, Google Glass, as we hoped it was going to be, you know, overlay over reality on at all times. Yes to all that, but looking through a window that you keep, a magic window you keep in your pocket, that is more challenging for me to see what outside of video games.
If you're asking me, like, do I think that our main form of interaction is going to be holding up our phones and walking around and doing it? I don't think so. But I think that we saw there were hints that we were going to get the iPad in the iPhone code before the iPad came out. You looked in there, you're like, ah, yeah, they think there's some potential for a larger format that maybe tablets, you know, really are the way of the future, like Microsoft thought and a lot of people thought. You know, and Apple sort of said, you know, we think we know at the right point where the hardware works. And I think that what this tells me is that, yes, they are going to, and I do think that, you know, we will go to a glasses thing, but Google Glass was such a horrible experiment and just ruined, you know, the idea of AR in many ways because it was not that. And the problem with HoloLens was this cool premise. Then people go through it and they look through this and like this small little box, like, wait, this is it? It's like, that's not what we want. We want this, oh my God, it's all around me. And that's what I believe Apple is trying to work towards, to say, yes, that's what people want. So, you know,
to be honest, Brian, I look at these demos and I see you can do a totally scalable and far more affordable, deployable at a moment's notice, like version of the Go game.
Oh, like, yeah.
You can walk into all the places that we would normally put actors in Austin on 6th Street. Except now we can have the best performances with the best actors sitting in those seats, you know, that we know that we've modeled out. And now you are having a silent experience going through an immersive world in your real world.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be conceptually, we're going to change the kind of concepts of games that we do. I'm very, very bullish on this because I look at where my interest levels are on it and saying like, oh, it's not that I'm always putting a thing in front of you. Maybe it's not, but maybe it's like, hey, let's do the haunted house game in your own house.
Do you want to know what I think would go absolutely like wildfire on this? Is imagine a social network targeted to teens that allowed you to place physical objects in, like, if you're a member of this tribe, let's say, you know, seventh graders, whatever.
Before you get to your idea, and I'm sure it's going to be brilliant, I just imagine that you just go full dad. It's like, all right, imagine a world targeted to teens where they're cleaning their room and not leaving things on the floor.
No, but like, imagine if all the students had, you know, knew that this room was a place where you could find this stuff, or so-and-so set this up to create a huge, you know, I don't know, filthy, I'm trying to keep it family friendly. But then meanwhile, the teachers didn't know because they weren't in that network and couldn't see all that stuff. Like, having a secret world on top of the world, I suspect would appeal to teenagers.
I think to a lot of people, Brian. I'm going to say yes. And like, there's a cool demo here where they turn the floor into this ocean where you're watching these ships going to battle. And I'm like, oh, dude, if I was hanging out friends, like, let's just play battle, you know, it's a different kind of gaming. It's not necessarily a thing you play for 3 hours. I don't know what it'll be. But another thing to think about is, and the important thing is, the room sensing technology, all this is running off of a stock iPhone.
Yeah.
Think of what you have to have your setup. Like, you play with the Vive, and man, Vive, I've had to set those up a couple of times for people. It's a pain to get the lighthouse fixed right and all this sort of stuff. Oculus, you still need your thing in front of you. And the better technologies out there, which, you know, Google's been working on and whatever, still are like their room sensing tech. You need hardware to add on to your phone. But this is a stock iPhone running this, which means I'm sure we're going to see, and I don't know the latency, that could be a problem, but I'm sure we're going to see somebody is going to say, hey, you know, I don't have to use it for AR. I could use it for VR, put this into a headset and not have any cables. And the thing we talked about, like, just look around and see stuff. We know that Apple is working behind the scenes for the next gen chips to get to that point. And that's, you know, that's the problem. People get like, oh, this, the Samsung Gear, the Google Gear, that's so cool. I put it in here, you put it in there. And it's like, yeah, it's a ViewMaster you can spin around. You take a step forward, you're still standing there.
God, oh man, old people are going to get so annoyed when youngsters walking around, you're like, take that thing off, look me in my real eyes. What are you doing? Always going around your own world.
And as we watch the Gorgon, you know, screaming at us, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's exactly, like, right? You paint different faces on all your friends. So it's like you don't see them looking dorky with a thing on their face. You see them as a, you know, a majestic a werewolf or whatever.
Now, I saw this is a weird tangent, but over the weekend or over this past week, Apple put out their first episode of Planet of the Apps. They're like Shark Tanky type show. It's not very good. But
I'm Justin's ducking, so I'm only hearing what sounds like a gecko getting stepped on.
No, that's all that happened. I just made a like. Okay.
And so one of the apps on there is this. I don't remember the name of it now, but it's a like furniture shopping app, and you would go to the app and you could see the furniture from these different suppliers, and you could, with their own technology, AR, put it into your room in real space.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and so they're selling it. They're pitching it to Gwyneth Paltrow and Will.i.am and Chuck Vaynerchuk, whatever.
I would like to think Gary Vee has a secret brother named Chuck Vaynerchuk.
How much Chuck could a Vaynerchuk chuck if a Vaynerchuk could chuck apps?
And we couldn't get Gary, but we got Chuck.
but so he's selling it to the panel as like, no one else is doing this. No one has the technology to do markerless AR like this.
Right.
And it blows my mind that that's the first episode of this brand new show that is outdated by Apple itself 1 week beforehand.
Yeah. Wait. So the show acts like everyone's like, this is a brilliant idea. Nobody is doing this.
The guy who was selling it, and then Jessica Alba picked it up. And so they go and incubate it. And but all of this is to say that their kind of larger play solution was interior mapping. The idea, kind of like a Project Tango style thing of like, yep. You know, we get people to use the technology and we can own the interior maps that they take of public spaces or what have you.
So now you have a data play that will be basically you have the most up-to-date Google Maps type thing. Yeah.
And I thought of all the things in that, that was actually pretty interesting because this is something that AR Kit could possibly play into a mapping element, not just necessarily an augmenting alone play. I don't know.
Right.
Because we haven't heard anything about Project Tango for years.
Yeah. There's been like one phone shipped with it. And the problem was that it was this, but you know, Project Tango was Google's, I think it was offshoot of Jupiter or whatever, which was a project which is hardware that makes it very, like multiple cameras that makes it very easy to create 3D maps of the environments around you. And it's a very, very cool kind of tech. But it was, you know, why are you paying? It was one of these things where it was hard for people to sort of understand why you would pay more for this. And it's going to be one of these things. Eventually, every phone will do this. Like Apple's now building the AR kit, whatever. Every phone will do it, and it'll be like, well, yeah, obviously it can do this, you know. But why? But you're in that early stage. Like, why do I need to have extra hardware to do this? Well, the hardware cost will fall, and you'll just put it on a chip anyways, or you put your space your cameras out, or you figure out how to interpolate that through software. And, you know, it's interesting to look at how ARKit works in the background, because what it does is it tries to find planes and it tries to estimate size of those things. The really cool thing, if you look at ARKit, if you go back and look at one of the demos, it's actually figuring out where the shadows go based upon the real shadows in your environment, not some computer simulated shadows, but it looks at where the lights are coming from. So if you have a strong light source in the background, as you move towards the object, you notice that the light gets brighter towards the back or whatever. That's an amazing sort of design thing. So we're looking at a BB-8 and he casts what looks like just as real of a shadow as somebody near him. If you look at the light sources on him, the light sources match what we assume are coming from the environment. Right. And that's cool.
So, I mean, once we've had a taste of AR enhanced, always on, you know, superior world over the world, I mean, we're just, until we get implants in our eyes, we're all just going to wear various degrees of ridiculous sunglasses for a while, right?
No.
Wait a minute. Also, how fast was that from, like, hey, I don't want to be the guy who says I don't get it, but I don't get it.
Wait, you're like, we're all doomed to
Jordy LaForge glasses.
To be clear, I said I see where the end of this goes, and it's very obvious to me where the end of this goes. We are in a very kludgy middle step of this, holding up a magic window, and usually to make those things survive, there's some tangible killer app that it's like, okay, it's not the thing I want at the end, but I do want this part right now. And that's the part where there aren't very many obvious plays that excite
me. I will tell you, I've said this before, my opinion, the thing we get is we get first, it's on our phones, our tablets. Oh, that's pretty cool. Then we get the better goggles. And by the way, you know, the app is, Apple is going to support the HTC Vive and all that, just in case.
Oh, awesome.
You get the next step, which is the better phones and all that have the better chips and the hardware, and it looks really good. And then we get the good glasses and the standalone glasses, all that. A technology that is an amazing piece of technology that is very – we all know what it is. We see it, but we haven't thought about what happens when it gets into our house is video projection and projection mapping. And we're now in an era where we're actually – there are going to be cars coming out with laser headlights, okay? You're actually at the point where you can use lasers for consumer lighting – super extremely bright in where you need them to be. They can actually map out where they don't want to be. If you're driving towards another car,
holy
it won't
cow.
Project the light at that car. So you start putting in, as these things fall considerably in price, you put several of these bulbs in your living room or around your house, and that might even be the way you just think about lighting things. And then it maps your entire place, and then you can do line of sight projection mapping. So you can projection map all this around you. And so if I look at a wall, it can become an AR wall, and I can actually use eye tracking to create 3D.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I think you mesh them all together. So you just, if you need like, oh yeah, I just put in this, you know, this fern and all this in this kitchen cabinet and it's dark over here. Like, oh, I'll just put a bulb in the corner here. And now, and we're looking at a really cool, you know, demonstration of just, you know, projection mapping in a room with these cubes and stuff. That's what I think is going to be the big thing, is you're just going to start putting these projection mapping bulbs into your place. So if you don't have you'll get a better experience with the glasses. You'll get a better experience of the, you know, better 3D, whatever. But you can do 3D with eye tracking and projection mapping onto any surface around you. And I can have my couch in front of my wall, but if I'm using laser projection mapping, I can create an image, you know, like we talked about before, where the Coke can stretched out across, you know, the table that looks from one angle like just a normal sized Coke can.
Right.
You could do that with projection mapping and I could have you look at a very uneven background, but I can projection map to give you what looks like a solid rectangle or a movie picture.
Right.
So.
No, that's very cool.
So that's just my thinking is that's where it'll go, is that's. That'll be the step, so you don't have to have the glasses on your head. You just, you know, you see it in front of you.
Yeah, then I guess the only downside is that it's not private, which is an aspect to the AR.
Well, it'd be in your home. I mean, either is your computer monitor in your home, you
right.
know. But remember, too, what you can do with projection mapping is you can do it. You can design it to be extremely line of sight. So, you know, there's a thing called foveation, which is, you know, as we go further away from the center of our field of vision, things are, we have far much less detail. And so if you want really good compression algorithms, like in VR, we'll often use that, where if you're looking here, we're only really worried about a lot of detail here. So yes, it won't be truly, but you know, in your own environment, if you and I were talking to each other in the same room, we'd be getting very different images.
Yeah.
Anyhow, speaking of images, I want you to imagine an image you've been desperately clinging to. A train, a tiny train.
Yeah.
As a mad chimpanzee, maybe genetically engineered, maybe robot, maybe we don't know what, is the engineer at the helm of it, races.
Getting a phone call, playing jaunty music.
Badly towards a mountain.
Well, let's find out what happened last week.
I'm getting to that. As we're
previously on
Johnny Quest.
Do the rest of it. It's fine.
Rise. Hands are not for hurting. Let's have a conversation.
Smoke starts emitting. Fire ignition. Missile shooting straight at you.
It rips his hand off. Please tell me he has no hand.
Yeah, it breaks his wrist, snaps his hand off. Brian has no hand. Brian,
damn it.
You're heading straight towards the mountain. Next thing you know, it's too late to jump off. The train's too late to slow down.
That was amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
For the audio listeners, in that recap, it was just us, and then suddenly there was footage of looked like principal photography of us actually on the kids' train, and it turns a mountain. Yeah. All right, look, we're heading right towards this this mountain. Justin, how fast does it look like we're going?
Fast enough that if we run into the side of the mountain, we're going to die, right?
But too fast to jump off and tumble on the kiddie train?
Too fast to jump off. If I remember correctly, the monkey is continuing to fiddle with more and more levers and knobs, and he was about to either push a button or pull a lever right as we ended last week.
But remember, some of those levers play Calliope music.
Yeah.
Many of them played Calliope music.
We enjoyed the jaunty tunes, but not so much our impending death. I turn to Justin and I say, well, it's been a good run.
And I say, I'd like to shake your hand. Oh, wait, you don't have a hand because you're a goddamn idiot.
Okay.
You lost your hand.
Yeah.
Technically, Bryce, you shot his hand off.
Well, tomato, tomato.
Well, right. No. Bryce shot a missile that Brian had easily dodged, but he decided apparently to fist bump it, and it ripped his hand clean off.
Listen.
Not to waste an opportunity to point out Brian's culpability in anything, Bryce did shoot the hand off.
Okay. Sure. On paper, I shot the hand off. All right. I will accept that.
But I didn't shoot the deputy.
All right. As you're heading towards this mountain, I'm sure you guys are thinking, like, okay, what? It's got to be
a trick, right? It's got to be a hologram. We're going to whip right through a hologram, and we're going to be in the Wonka candy cave.
Okay. Somebody said maybe the Bat Cave. Maybe so you're hoping for a hologram. Justin?
Yeah. At this point, I've been so flirting with suicide and death in my head because this journey has become so taxing that I'm secretly hoping that this ends with us scattered across the desert. But I also know that there is no true justice in this universe, and we will almost surely have a last second trap door open or a hologram revealed, and we will be within yet another a secret government facility.
I'm actually with ICU. I'm hoping for the Buckaroo Bonds. I hope one of these levers is going to blast a laser at the rock, and the moment we hit the rock, we'll be transported across the eighth dimension.
That's one possibility there. You could last-minute Zeppelin picking you up.
Yeah, sure.
Yep.
Okay. We could go on that. It could be last-minute rescue. I don't know who the person would rescue there. Could be, I don't know, maybe the train tracks actually are camouflaged and go up over the mountain?
could be. Wait, this is a long time we're headed towards this mountain, man.
Imagine this Bible parable where you meet God and it's like, God, what is your plan for us? He's like, well, I don't know, maybe you could be a doctor. You know, that's a fulfilling thing.
Or I'm just the storyteller, guys.
That's also very good.
I'm not God, guys. I'm just the storyteller. So you're hurtling towards the mountain, okay? And all of a sudden, you notice that the train, the mountain's still there, and you're not getting any closer.
Wait, but the tracks are moving underneath us, right?
Tracks are moving underneath you.
I look around for something to drop and see if it goes back. I find my broken off hand and I toss some of the bits
and
of my hand.
And you wet the finger of that one and hold it up and try to feel the wind.
No, I drop it down to see if they really are flying back behind or if this is some kind of illusion.
Well, you realize you're stationary and you turn back around, you look behind you, and you see Bryce, Mecha Bryce, is pulling the tracks out from underneath you, trying to track you backwards.
I decide this is a good time to get out of the train while it's still stationary. And I say, here, take my hand and carry it along with me behind me as I leave.
Well, your hand, you know, got taken off by the missile and was smashed into the mountainside, so your hand's not in the play.
Got it. Well, So
you are stationary right now because Mecha Bryce, as he's trying to pull that track backwards,
sure,
to try to drag you backwards,
I jump, hoping to escape safely.
Justin?
I follow his lead.
All right. So you guys jump, you run off. Mecha Bryce is pulling the track. He doesn't realize it first. He's trying to pull you in. He's trying to reel you in.
I assume for Mecha Bryce, this is like he started popping bubbles on packing material, and he just can't stop. It feels really good to keep pulling that track.
Sure. It's one of those satisfaction things.
Yeah, I mean, he thinks he's going to get you, and then all of a sudden you look back as he pulls that train towards him. The train is in front of him. And Brian, you realize now that he's got the train, and you tried very hard, very valiantly to win him over and to tell him that all was okay. And you just watch as he just smashes the train to pieces.
I asked Justin to please remind me to have words with him about this. This
How
is
about
coming
never
up.
Never have
his
words
review.
With him again. He has wanted to murder us since we came back in contact with him. He is apparently traveling to different dimensions that we like are just by happenstance visiting. He is the most malevolent, dangerous force in our life.
Okay, but
none.
But surely he didn't hurt the monkey engineer.
We've had a better interaction with Hitler than Bryce.
That's a good point, actually. Hitler was that's a sentence I'll not be completing in the broadcast.
Cool dude compared to Bryce.
So the monkey engineer, he jumps free at the last moment, and he's now running after, chasing after you guys.
He seemed friendly, so I wave with my good hand. Come on, let's go as we run.
All right, he runs. He catches up with you. He's actually surprisingly fast on the ground, faster than you would expect, you know, somebody who evolved to brachiate is able to do. And so they catch up with you, and he starts taking off, and he leads you back towards where the tracks went into the mountain.
Does that take us towards Bryce, or it seems
away
like our
Bryce.
Best move?
Away from Bryce.
Okay, go. I follow. I say, Bebo, that's your name now. Thank you, Bebo.
Monkey turns around, looks at Justin, does a shrug.
Yeah, he's going to call you Bebo. It's fine.
Okay. Run towards the wall. Run right towards that. Monkey goes right up towards the wall, the side of the mountain, taps it. Nothing happens.
Is there any sound of the tap? Does it just sound like rock?
Sound working. It's rock. He taps it again. More rock.
Suspecting that maybe this is a hidden door that was expecting a train playing Calliope music, I do my best impression of the song that was playing, and I'm all do 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 do.
And the monkey starts to dance.
I immediately tell Captain Hook to cram it for 5 seconds as we try to figure out our mortal lives. I start tapping trying to communicate with Bebo. I start tapping on the side of the mountain and like miming door open or like walk through.
Yeah, and then he shrugs, and then he's like scratches his head, holds up his finger, and he pretends to press a button.
The button, the button that was on the train.
It's like, oh, he looks at Brian angrily.
I scan around for any debris. Maybe amazingly, the piece of the train that we needed fell near us. I'm betting not.
No, it's now being stomped by Bryce, who's having a bit of a fit as he just tears the train to pieces. And oh my God, he's throwing the locomotive at us right now.
Okay. Well,
Do the locomotion.
So I attempt to dodge the train, but then also I'm trying to scan the train as it comes towards us to see if maybe this button will get to the right place at the right time after all.
I'm going to push Ryan out of the way, because dodging the train is going to be the operative element. There will be plenty of time for us to search where the button is.
Right. Yeah. So I run.
Yeah, you guys run. Monkey's like, this way, you know, doesn't say that, but he just motions for you. You follow him up a path. You follow him up the side of the mountain, of the hill. You get back there and you can look down and you can see the train track where it ran into the edge of the mountain. You see Bryce there standing. There's this crater of anger, this crater of frustration and anger. Like, man, this is some scary sort of stuff, looking at his rage. And then Bryce, Mecha Bryce, turns up, looks up at you guys, raises one of his arms that's got a missile on it.
I go
see
faster.
It ignite. Fires at you. Okay. Now
I look at Bebo and look for direction from our monkey companion.
He points to the other side of the mountain. He realizes the mountain's not just a mountain. It's a ridge. It's a ridge. And what is on the other side of the ridge? A lush, verdant jungle stretching for miles and miles, hundreds of miles.
That's lovely. But how close is this missile by now? I don't think I can outrun a falling train, but not a launching
you
missile.
You hear the sound of falling water, and he points towards a waterfall leading into a lake on the other side.
We run
for the waterfall. Jump off the waterfall.
Jump off the waterfall as well.
And the monkey grabs Justin by one hand, Brian by the only hand.
Yeah.
And invites you to jump with him.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. We don't have any moves here, Justin. Yeah. We got to jump.
Go.
Now, remember, as you're falling through midair, you realize, like, wait, chimpanzees really aren't good swimmers.
I mean, too bad for him. Luckily, I'm used to be a great swimmer when I had two hands.
All right, so you jump in. It's like a 100-foot plunge. It's a 100-foot plunge into the water. You fall into the water, okay, and trying to climb to the surface, whatever, and next thing you know, Brian, you've got a monkey clinging to your back.
So I'm probably not able to breathe so much with a monkey scared and pushing me underwater.
Well, he's just currently clinging for support.
Okay. All right. Right on.
I grab Brian's one available hand, and I help him get back to the surface and the edge of the lake.
All right. So finally, you climb to the surface. You get there, and you look, and you're surrounded by jungle.
Perfect.
Right.
I'm expecting Bryce to come over that ridge any minute. I'm still looking for cover. I go to the thickest, darkest part of that bush and hide.
Should probably keep moving because he's going to go and wonder if we're dead up there.
Yeah, that's true. Probably also with all of his enhancements, you know, scans for heat. He's pretty much the predator, I realized.
All right. So yeah, you hear some rumbling on the side of the hill. So you go into the jungle and you find a path, right? Find this path, you're running along the path, and all of a sudden, as you're running, you notice something out of the corner of your eye, but it looked like kind of like maybe like a mile marker.
Like a trail marker?
Like one of those little white round mile markers.
All right. No time to fuss over that. We're still running from Mecca.
What does it say? What is the marker
you
say?
You just passed it because you're in a hurry. Now you see another one, you're like, oh, it's not a mile marker. It's a human skull.
Yeah, that's not great. Keep running. Better right. The devil that you don't know.
Finally, you come running and you come to a fork in the jungle
road.
That's
not the phrase, Brian.
That's not. I'm pretty sure that's how it went.
It's the opposite. It's better the devil you know than the devil you don't.
Well, okay, but the devil you know is definitely bad. But the devil you don't know, that's Pandora's devil. That could be a good devil.
Again, Pandora's box, something that you don't want to open. Like, you don't want, like, you hope
I want to write the post-apocalyptic novel where Brian tells everybody how things, what they meant, and all the phrases and everything, all the expressions and stuff, you know? Remember, it's better the devil you don't know than the devil you do.
Because the devil you do know, he's a real jerk. Yeah. That other devil might be pretty cool. You won't know unless you open that box.
You come to a fork in the road, and there are two signs on either side of the road. On one sign is a very crudely painted emoji of a smiley face.
Is there any way that could possibly have been meant as a grimace of terror?
Well, Brian, glad you asked. On the other road, the other sign is a skull and crossbones.
Okay, Justin, hear me out. This looks like a very obvious choice. But I want you to know that the skull and crossbones thing did not originally mean death. It actually originally meant it referred to the life everlasting. Actually, that they it was a nautical thing. This is all true. This is for reals. Don't give me that look. So I'm just saying, we don't know what society made these two symbols, And it's not in, it's not, it may seem inherently obvious, but that's us projecting our cultural time and place. We're out of our regular dimension, man.
So, okay, Harry Langdon, when you're doing your Da Vinci Code, do you have the Tom Hanks mullet or not that he had in the first movie?
I don't know.
All right. Well, Brian, I hear Langdon. What you're telling me. Just real quick give me a visual symbol of 1 to 10, how sure you are about what you're saying.
Okay.
Just go ahead. Hold up.
I try to count up to past 5, but I can't.
You know what?
So instead, I drop down to only one finger.
You see a skeleton arm in kind of in the brush, the bush.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I walk over. I grab that skeleton arm. And then I still only hold 5 fingers up because I'm not really totally sold on this.
And then you see another skeleton arm.
Okay. Which way does there seem to be more skeletons?
They're kind of in the middle, and they may have chew marks on them.
Yeah.
What is Bebo doing?
Looking to you guys for help. He's
Now
he's scratching himself.
Okay, I say.
Oh, now he found a stick. He's picking his nose with a stick.
I say.
He's
Bebo,
just doing chimpanzee stuff.
And I look over my shoulder as I appear to kind of jauntily walk towards the skull aisle, as if I intend to go that way. And I read him for reactions.
He happily follows you. Happily follows you there.
Bebo.
All right, Brian. I feel like it's better the devil we don't.
So which way are we going?
As a test, I would suggest maybe walking towards the emoji and see what he does.
Yeah, that's good. We have to do both sides. Now I walk back and I jauntily walk towards the emoji happy face.
And he happily follows you.
That's right. I knew it. All right, Justin. I say we take the emoji thing, but if it ends up killing us, I reserve the right to wag my one good finger and remind you that I warned you this might happen.
Wait, you're anti-emoji?
I'm just saying.
You just want to reserve the right to bitch?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Congratulations, here's your fast pass to bitch if it so comes to pass. Let's go.
Good.
All right, so which way did you take?
Emoji. Happy emoji.
All right, and you rolled a 12, and... so you take the emoji path and you're walking along and it's like, you know, it's jungle, you know, it's every now and then Bebo just sort of hops up on a tree, climbs around, then he jumps back down and it's kind of like a little pathway. It's not that bad. And you're getting, you know, you're walking for a while. It's just still more jungle. And, you know, you hear strange noises and stuff in the jungle. And there are things following you and probably tracking you too, by the way. And maybe large things too. And then, you're getting really kind of hungry. And then you catch the whiff of maybe food being prepared.
What kind of food? Like roasting flesh?
Probably.
Like chicken, right?
Whoever it is, they're civilized
it's
enough
white
to
meat.
Cook. Whoever it is that's they're civilized enough to cook, maybe they'll be able to be reasoned with. Better the
right,
devil we don't
you
know.
Only civilized people have the use of fire.
I mean, I'm trying to look on the bright side here. Let's keep going.
I'll be right, Brian Brush with Starship Commander.
Brian, what could go wrong? We're being chased by a cybernetically enhanced lunatic. We've gone through at least 3 dimensions, and we got 3 arms and a dream. Let's get this thing running.
More.
We keep going. Definitely. We sally forth. We sally forth, but we try to tread lightly, and we're. If we see anybody ahead of us, we're going to try and kind of scope everything out before we walk right into it.
You see the remnants of a village. All of a sudden you see the grass huts, but it's also made from, let's say, like parts of aluminum siding and like just like civilization collapsed and they rebuilt it using all these sort of random parts and stuff. So you see a village and you see some sort of like people dressed in rags, but not like they took old clothes and made them look kind of, you know, usable again, but very sort of primitive style. And they're all gathered around something in the center, and you see that there's a large fire and a smell of just really, really poignant, just powerful roasting meat.
Okay, so I'm going to assume it's a feast, but I ain't no dummy. I'm not going to run up and extend – fool me once with one hand, that's bad. So I stay off to the periphery. I'm just watching. I'm not going to go waltzing into this.
So you're watching. You can't see what's in the middle of them, right? So you're trying to peer around, but that's your plan, is just stealth?
Yep. Yep.
Stealth. Yeah.
We're tired of surprises.
All right. Well, you're there. You're watching. And all of a sudden you hear a twig break. And you look. And Bebo is walking towards the group of people.
Oh. I watch very intently. And I whisper under my breath. It was good knowing you, Bebo.
Bebo walks up to the nearest person who's actually holding a spear, tugs on them. Person turns around, tall guy, tan skin, shaved head, right? Wearing what may have been the remnants of some jeans that are now cut off, shorts, colored shirts, got a spear, turns around, looks wide-eyed, sees Bebo. Bebo smiles. Bebo dances. And if Bebo points, right back at you guys.
I hold my stump and I kind of shake it and I go, Bebo.
Yeah.
So I assume, do we have an escape velocity vector here, or do we just have to get captured, do you think?
Three hands up in the air.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Three hands up in the air. You get surrounded by people with spears and you get pushed into a hut, right? And you're sat there, and finally the village elder comes in there and sits down, and he says, next time on Journey Quest.
No, oh, that's a weird thing for him to say. What do you think it means?
I don't know.
It means that next time we're going to be on Journey Quest.
God damn it, Bebo. You probably shouldn't have named him Bebo.
Gentlemen, picks.
You know what? I had an unusual experience. You know, I had Monday, Tuesday, my big podcasting days, and then immediately we left the next morning, Wednesday, for a family reunion. So I've been totally out of the loop. And now here we are as if from a time machine, and all I know is sun and sand and watching my kids swim far too dangerously out into the water for my comfort. So I actually have consumed no new media since last time.
No worries.
I got a pick. So we shot the Kickstarter video for Action News on Saturday.
Sweet.
But one of the elements of that script was that at the end of most evening news, is there's usually like the cliched squirrel riding on water skis kind of clip.
Yeah,
right?
From another side of town, look at this guy.
It's like oh, we leave you now with like this that thing, and then it comes back and it's just the two people talking as the lights kind of slowly dim, or it's from like another upward shot, just that kind of idea. So I wanted to do something like that, and I won't spoil what we wound up getting, but we found on Pond 5, which I know has been advertised, in another era, was advertised very, very heavily on podcasting, but I wound up finding just great, a perfect...
Water skiing squirrel?
I don't know. Do I want to spoil it? Because it's actually pretty funny when people see it, but...
No, you don't have to
spoil it. It is aquatic-based, and it is an animal in a position that you would not expect.
Nice.
But I found it on Pond 5 for a very reasonable price, and it kind of was perfect. And it saved us from, just going onto YouTube and trying to like contact somebody and finding out who actually owns that. And then, just avoided us a lot of headaches.
Or
so
big trying to strap water skis onto a squirrel. I mean, let's be honest with
for
you.
That.
You got to size them first. You're like, oh, I got them. They're too big, And then like that alone, I'm like, one, I want to have a squirrel water ski.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Step one. Step two. How big should those skis be? I think at what point are you like, I need to find a squirrel that will cooperate?
Yeah. No. Are you going to get a shot at those squirrels' little feet?
So I got a pick. Let me be very clear. Let me absolutely state, I thought the direction of Wonder Woman was fantastic. I thought Gal Gadot, it's going to be Wonder Woman. I thought Gal Gadot was amazing. I thought Chris Pine was really, really strong. I thought the supporting characters did a good job. I very much enjoyed the movie. It has that last act problem, same as like Thor did, whatever. But I thought that the characters and all that, and again, I think, you know, Patty Jenkins has directed by far, and I even want to say, you know, the best in the DC. That's so, you know what? Like, listen, throw your iPhone in the air with your camera running, and you've directed a better movie than anything that'd been in the DC cinematic universe before. Okay. that's just so what? She's directed a really, really, she's did a great job of directing. Really, 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 really solid. Really, really good. And I'm excited that watching that and then seeing, you know, the Black Panther trailer come out where you're like, hey, and I'm not gonna talk about like diversity in the sense of what somebody's ethnicity or gender is, but just the idea of when we expand beyond the sort of normal director pool of, you know, well, this person did VFX movies, so we'll have them do a superhero movie. When you expand in the director pool of, man, this person did really good character dramas.
Yeah.
Guess what? They give you really good character superhero movies, which are like Colin Trevorrow and other people I'm excited about. I'm going to give you my, and I don't want to spoiler time. And this is a thing that really made me go, I'm going like, all right, how is DC going to screw this up? How is DC going to screw this up as I'm watching the movie? And then I get to this point, I'm like, why? Nobody in the writer's room. Nobody. And again, I'm the only person who's bothered by this. I'm the only person who heard say this. So don't even listen to me say this if you love the movie and you don't want to be thinking about this.
Is this what you texted me?
Yeah. And have you heard anybody else bring that up?
Not as explicitly with as many examples cited, but certainly I have heard the base element levied, but not nearly as credible of a you came in with the like final 5 minutes of Matt Locke, you know, case closed monologue.
So, and again, if you haven't seen the movie, don't listen. Go watch the movie and enjoy the movie.
So okay. Spoilers for Wonder Woman. This is the last thing we're going to do, and then we're going to end the episode. So this is it.
Okay, and this is my thing. And again, I make a lot of allowance to superhero movies. I know when I'm watching a superhero movie, whatever. Brian, you saw it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, here's my thing. Okay, now again, people go the nod like, hey, it's very similar to, you know, Captain America. You know, they both deal with war. Somebody find themselves in war, both period pieces, all that. And I get that. And I'm like, yeah, this is sort of like this. And Captain America, you know, sort of embraced certain kinds of storytelling, whatever. And I get that. And that part, like, oh, it's going to be a lot like Captain America. I'm like, well, you know, that's cool. And Wonder Woman was a wartime character. She had a prominence in World War II, actually. But I'm okay with that because that's when we got a lot of characters. I watched a movie where literally the big emotional pull at the end was about a woman who fought in the war, crying over a picture of a man in uniform who died, or ostensibly died, was lost, trying to save a city from being bombed by a German superplane. I was like, wow, this is like literally, I'm like, oh, he's running towards the plane. I'm like, wait, no, don't. That's gonna be really Captain America. That's how Captain America at the end of that is. He tried to stop us from the plane. I'm like, just, and then I'm like, you could have just a train, anything. Now you don't have to do that. That's so literally like Captain America at the ending of that. And then, you know, he's gonna, I'm like, all right, he's gonna die. You know, Captain didn't die, but he's gonna look like, you know, he dies to her. And then like we get the celebration we had in Captain America. Hey, the war's over. And then she's got the photo, and she's got the photo of Steve in the uniform. And I'm like, this is like. That was blatant to me. That was just to be like.
Well, I do think there was a deeper message they were sending by directly aping the end of the first Captain America movie.
Yeah, we don't have our own original ideas for how to create one of the most powerful emotional moments we could do.
Do you think they're actually
it's hack,
incapable?
It's
or?
It is hack, Brian. It is hack. Do I think that when they go to their competitive series and take this literally take a thing that they didn't need to, like, you know, yes, did they do it because it worked for Captain America? Sure. Should you do that? I don't know. I was bothered by the fact that they had Jenkins did such a wonderful way of addressing of handling it. She did such a marvelous job of directing that she was served this ending that like, and I don't blame her for it. I just, it's like, yeah, these are the people that made, you know, these are the same people that, you know, did Batman versus Superman. And these are people who did, you know, Suicide Squad and Man of Steel. It's like they managed to just go in there and sabotage what I thought was a wonderful job of directing. And it's still a great movie. Go see it. It's fun. It's a really, really fun movie. But I was like, go.
Yeah, no, I mean, this has been my thought on Wonder Woman is that I was so sold on the first third of the movie that mm-hmm. while there are certainly very fun and I think more unexpectedly rich moments throughout, it was trading off how much I liked those characters and how much I liked the first 30, you know, the first, you know, hour or so of the movie throughout the rest of it. And mm-hmm. by that end, it just, you know, whether or not it has the exact fingerprints on it of Captain America, that third act just kind of gets so super, you know, OP characters, punchy solvey thing by the end of it that it's like, I'm like, okay. But it was part of like my initial impression that like, this just feels like a lot of movies because it doesn't really feel like this is the ending to the movie that I initially started watching. But at the same time, like, you know, I liked everybody in it. And I liked how they reacted. But I totally agree.
To that point, let me make it very clear. Like when I had a friend who texted me like, oh, how did you, you know, he said, I figured you'd have a problem. The Aries thing. I'm like, I didn't bother me because Diana's journey was very real, was very, very consistent. She made smart decisions, true to her character all the way throughout. That, you know, that the Aries sort of thing was, yeah, it was a little silly, whatever. But her emotional thing, where she was, her character change and her arc was really well done. I'm like, yeah, that's sort of a silly thing to do it, but I believe that character. I believe that she went through this point, and that, again, I'm a plot guy, but character trumps everything. And I forgave it for that because I'm like, no, I watched a character have a real journey, so I'm okay with that. You know, when she goes into the no man's land, you know, symbolism, whatever kind of thing, I'm like, this is over the top, but man, this is really awesome. This is really, really cool the way this is done, the idea of heroicism, her idea, and what I loved about Captain America, the idea of this character that is this truly good-hearted person. And it was cool here, it was like Steve Trevor in this sort of his own way. I love those characters. I thought they were really, really well done. And things that people thought would annoy me that were kind of cliche, silly sort of writing, like, nah, I was still liking the characters and their journey. And they felt, I never had a moment where I'm like, well, that was dumb. Why did they do that? That was dumb. Why did they do that? Never had a single moment. I did that with the, you know, the writers, you know, I'm like, you could have just changed a couple elements there. And I would be like, oh, it's so feel. But anyhow, it's still, I highly recommend this movie. It is way better than I had any reason to expect. And then Calhoun says in the chat room says, when I saw that ending, I was like, oh, in the sequel, they're going to find Steve Trevor in a block of ice and thaw him out.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, real quick. I know we said we were going to end on that, but I did love that Black Panther trailer.
Nice.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it.
Brian. It's
good. Okay. Maybe we can watch it and then talk about an after thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, we got a cool topic for that, so we'll do I'll just say right now, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.